Welcome to today's edition. This is July 19th, 2023 of the Immigration Hour podcast. You know, I've been doing this podcast really consistently for the first 10 years, and I kind of backed off because I just got so busy. But now back being consistent again. So it's been going on for about, got to be pretty close to 15 years, maybe a little bit longer than that. So it's great to be with you. Today's podcast is about the EB-5 program. Now, the EB-5 program has had lots of twists and turns and misdirections, and right now, a real problem for those from China, especially a little bit from India. The EB-5 program was created back in 1990, I did an EB-5 in 1991. One of my very first cases was an EB-5 for a Canadian in Arizona when I was living there. And it, of course, he got approved. He got his green card in about 3 years. The initial green card right away. I mean, like literally, it's like 6 months, and then he got the conditions removed in 1993 and 1994, something like that. But it really was a poorly run program internally from the government, and the ultimate creation of regional centers, where there has been, of course, unfortunate fraud. Many of the regional centers, I'd say the vast majority of regional centers, are legit good investment opportunities for people. If you really want to get a green card, they're not getting much of an investment, but it's certainly a way to get a green card. And many of them get their money back. But there are those, of course, that invest in EB-5s that, like real estate. Real estate's a great asset, but it's not cash. It's really hard to transfer that out and sell it. So if you're willing to pay, $800,000, $100,000 for a green card, okay, or $1.2, $1.3 million, and you know that's what you're doing, and you don't expect the money back, and it comes back, it's a gift, right? Now, this was easy. EB-5 program, not paying interest on what is basically micro loans. Not micro, but if you want a $20 million project and you got 40 guys giving you $500,000, kind of micro loans for them. Not paying interest was no big deal because interest rates were really low. Well, now interest rates are 4 or 5%. And you're telling me that you're not going to give me a return on my investment? What kind of investment is this? I mean, are you really not going to make money? You're not going to sell this at the end, whatever this happens to be. And of course, individual investor EB-5s are tough. They're tough to do. Many of them would rather be L's or could be L's, a much faster path to a green card. But when you look today at the processing times for EB-5, it really is just shocking. When you think about the concept, I am a foreign national who's wealthy enough and have saved enough money or earned enough money in my lifetime to have, many of you, $500,000, now $900,000 or $1.2 million. I have this money, and I want to bring it to America. In order for me to ultimately get a green card. And you're telling me this foreign investor that I have to commit to the money, I have to show the money, I have to sign the agreements. And frankly, for many of these EB-5 cases, I actually have to invest the money. And then I file a 526 with the USCIS. And you're telling me on your website that you're going to take 56 and a half months, almost 5 years, before you adjudicate the 526. And only then will I either be able to consular process outside, if I'm outside the United States. Now, the recent law changes allow investors in EB-5 to concurrently file an adjustment if you're in the United States, but many people are not in the United States. So they cannot concurrently file. Now those processing times are for individuals not from India and China. And if you are from India and China, they're telling you that a Chinese EB-5 is now 81 months to process. So that's 7 years. I mean, really, why would you do this? And an Indian EB-5 on their website is taking 52 months. So oddly enough, an Indian EB-5 is taking less time than rest of the world EB-5s. Now, this really makes no sense, especially in light of yesterday's announcement at the USCIS. So yesterday, and I'm going to get to why they made this announcement in a second. Yesterday, the USCIS announced an update to the, quote, visa availability approach. Now, this is important to understand because myself, along with my colleagues at Immigration Impact Litigation, we have pending before the federal court in the Northern District of California a lawsuit. And that lawsuit is carried on behalf of, I think we have 12 or 15 plaintiffs left. Those individuals who are not from China, some are from India, some are from Russia, some are from Brazil, who have been waiting since mostly 2019. So they've been waiting 4 years for their case. Now, immigration is saying, well, you're in the normal processing time because we're taking 56 and a half months to do these cases, 80% of these cases. And then, so I filed for discovery. The government filed a motion to dismiss or a motion for summary judgment, not a motion to dismiss. And I filed for discovery and said, Judge, I need information. And the only people with information is the government. Ultimately, the judge ordered, and over the government's objection, very strong objection, and I had asked for like 18 different things. And the government opposed all of them, but the judge ordered two categories of information. And the judge issued this order on May 4th and gave the government until July 15th to respond. Here's what the government asked. Here's what I asked for. A listing of the number of unadjudicated I-526s by country of birth of the principal applicant and the earliest priority date of each country's oldest pending 526. Now, why did we ask for that? One, we want to know how many 526s are pending because immigration is unclear about that in their normal postings. They also don't delineate them by country of birth, which is vital because if you are in a category which has no backlog, why are you taking 5 years to adjudicate a case? It is inherently unreasonable because you're not going to be able to use those cases. And then we'll get to know the earliest part of the date is why are some countries taking that are not, again, subject to the long waiting lines like India and China, why are they taking longer than others? The second category of information we asked for is the number of forms 526 received by quarter since 2018, and the number of forms I-526 adjudicated by quarter since 2018, broken down by assigned country of birth for the principal applicant, including information regarding expedite requests. Now, the government produced this information to me on July 14th, and I have not yet released it. And I have not yet released this information as a lawyer in the case to the public, because it is under some of it is under a protective order. That is, the court in California allows the government to apply for a protective order. In this case, we agreed to it for certain pieces of information that we had not yet seen. Now, this protective order agreement allows me to object to the protective order and get that information released, which I will probably be doing. But there are some things produced by the government here, and there were four sets of documents the government gave us. They simply call them defendants production 1, 2, 3, and 4. And two pages of them are not subject to the protective order. They're not marked confidential by the government, so I can disclose them. So we're going to talk about those on the show today. Now, that's important because in their motion for summary judgment, the government said that they followed a visa availability approach, which is clearly not true. It's clearly not true because visas are available for any EB-5 for everybody from outside India and China for years. And it's quite clear that they are that immigration is not using all 10,000 numbers. It's evident of that as it relates to the rest of the world numbers. And this is, this is why we sued. Now, this is the information we got, I think, is wildly valuable to us as I prepare a motion for summary judgment. The government filed those before discovery, so we've had their motion for a long time. I imagine that they might want to update their motion in light of the announcement yesterday from their client that we're talking about here, update the visa availability approach. So immigration announced an update to the visa availability approach to managing inventory of forms I-526. The visa availability approach applies to pre-EB-5 2022 526s and prioritizes the assignment of such petitions for investors with an available visa or a visa will be available soon. The USAS investor program manages this inventory through workflow queues, factoring in whether a visa is available or will be available soon, and two, the underlying project being reviewed. Workflow, and that's important because if these are regional center EB-5s, then if, for example, the first guy gets approved, why isn't everybody else approved? You could quickly go through the issue of source of funds. That's pretty easy to get through, I think. So why aren't they just all approved together? All right, so workflow queues, which are the second criteria, are generally managed in a first out, first out order, which we know is not true. When a visa is available, will be available. Now, effective July 2023, presumably yesterday, the immigrant office, the IPO office that does these adjudications will update this approach by grouping petitions by new commercial enterprise, which means whether it's a singular business or whether it is a regional center, with filing dates on or before November 30, 1919, which is oddly enough, the filing dates of our applications are before that. Now, so basically they issued this update for our lawsuit. There is no other reason that they issued this update within the workflow competition where the petition has been reviewed and there's a visa available to gain greater efficiencies. So when you go to the book, and this is a really interesting memo. Okay, I guess it's effective July 18th, so it's effective yesterday when it publishes. The IPO will group new commercial enterprise by new commercial with filing dates before November 30 within the third queue. Now, there are three queues. The first queue contains forms 526 where a visa is not available and not soon to be available and is ordered first in, first out. That would be China and India. The second queue contains petitions related to projects IPO not previously reviewed and have a visa available or soon to be available. IPO reviews projects in the queue in order from oldest to newest. The third queue contains forms 526 that have an available visa, a reviewed or non-pooled single investor project. This queue is organized by receipt date, oldest to newest. This is the queue from which 526 petitions are assigned to officers for adjudication. The form 526 have generally been assigned to officers in first in, first out. So the third queue appears to be the most important queue, which of course makes no sense unless you work for the government. And later on, it says, as described below, the IP will group petitions in the third queue by filing date on or before November 30th, because adjudicators can process petitions more efficiently when they are working multiple petitions associated with the same new commercial enterprise, given the overlap of project documents and issues presented. So as it pertains to our clients, this is vitally important. Now ask yourself, would immigration have issued this policy if Cook and Impact Litigation had not sued? The answer is clearly no, it would not have. But I think being forced to produce discovery in this case is the key factor here. Now let's take a look. One of the first document that I'm going to talk about today, which is not subject to the protective order. This is the immigrant petition, I-526, pending by country of birth. How many are pending by country of birth? Now, there are currently 12,676 I-526s pending, not approved, pending for adjudication, 12,670. That is a year and change of EB-5s. It's an year and change of EB-5s. And I have a listing by country. China, of these 12,000 pending cases, China has 5,272, and India has 1,897. Other large countries are South Korea, 912, Hong Kong, 311, Mexico, 328, Canada, why are people leaving Canada? 136, Brazil, 204. Those are the only triple digit countries. There are lots of other countries on here. You know, there are some from Belgium. Okay, I get it. There is a couple from, I'm not going to mention some of these countries because they may be a little sensitive, but we'll be putting this information public so you'll be able to see it. Two from Fiji. Why don't you want to leave Fiji? France, I can get why you want to leave France. There's 53 of those, 46 from Germany. Iran has 93 of these. Those are probably stuck in massive backlogs. So there is lots of these cases pending. Now, that's the first, and that's just numbers. It's just how many from each country. Immigration, I mean, USCIS has put a confidential marking on the second thing we asked for, which was by country of birth, the oldest processing case. So, and the idea is maybe they could be identified. They might be subject to be identified. We'll fight that in court with the judge. But the other item is page one of, or pages one and two of document reduction number three, which is, if I make this big enough to read, receipts, approvals, and denials by beneficiary's country of birth and by fiscal year from fiscal years 28 through 23, which is through July 7th, 2023, which is really through the first three quarters and change of fiscal year 2023. This is actually kind of important because this gives us a little bit of information in the context of cases. So these are, immigration is saying that since 2018, I have to make sure I read it, receipts, approvals, and denials, except, and these are in the first screen here, these are really interesting numbers. Because this first line here that I can make public is, I just want to make sure I'm reading this stuff right, because it's a little, it's government, right? It's a little confusing, because it's telling me that, I get it now. It's, all right. So receipts apparently can be public, but approvals cannot be public. Well, that's very interesting. So I can't disclose the public, but immigration says that since fiscal year 2018, and presumably there's nobody with unadjudicated case prior to fiscal year 2018, which is October 1, 2017, that 18,000 EB-5s have been filed, have been receipted by the Immigration Service that apparently are still pending. Okay, these are receipts. Still pending is what I can tell you. And there's 18,000 of those. Now, you can, approvals may be available somewhere else. I'm not going to talk about approvals because those are subject to a bar of subject to this. And I'm not going to talk about the denials. But I can tell you that if the total were added together for fiscal year 28 and 19, so that's 10,000, 19, 20,000, 19, 30,000, 20. 40,000, 21, and fiscal year 22 is 50,000, 60,000 this year. They have not received 60,000 cases, which means there should be no backlog. There should be no backlog in EB-5s. Now, I think this itself mandates a deeper analysis as it relates to the allocation of visas within the category, the visa, the limit, per country limit. But looking at the 18,000 pending cases, of those 18,000 pending cases, 3,500 are from China, and 4,000 are, and 84 are from India, of these cases, and India's has had a substantial increase. The biggest years. There's a real downturn in 2021 and 2022 in the filing of EB-5s, mostly because the programs stopped. They were in hold. But there was massive numbers of Indian nationals filing in 2019 and in 2018. So India, there are still 385 2018 Q1. Those are September 1, 2017 cases, as well as 1,254 from China. So 385 from India. Well, you take the whole fiscal year, it's 2518 from India and 1249 from India, from China. Let's go back. India 1249, China 2519. So that's almost 4,000 of the tending visas for that year, which is a vast majority of these cases that are still pending from that time. And I would suggest that these numbers clearly show that there is not a consistent adjudicatory process related to visa availability approach, because it can't be. Visa availability would suggest that nobody other than India or China should have a pending case from 2018 to 2019. That's what visa availability says. So these two documents are really important in the context of understanding why my case, which I filed in 2018 or 2019, is not adjudicated. And the forcing immigration to update how they process these cases with their announcement yesterday. Now they're going to know it has nothing to do with the lawsuit. This is the exact same thing that happened when Immigration Impact Litigation sued on the U-Free, the Ukrainian program, when we demanded that immigration stop charging for EADs because these were refugees under the law. And basically, all they did was file a motion to dismiss after they updated their policy and said, oh, by the way, EADs are free. But you know what? They never returned that money. And now we have a pending case in federal district court in D.C. To get $80 million back to these refugees who came to the United States under the U4U program. In immigration, you just can't steal money and do it. Now, here's the other thing. If immigration has pending right now, so they have pending right now these cases. What are they? 18,000 cases and change. They have pending cases. Where's the money to adjudicate this? Immigration received in 2018 8,000 cases in 2018. 6,000 cases in 2018. Those people paid. What was the filing fee? Let's take a look at the filing fee. This is the thing that I've been on for a long time at the Immigration Service. The 526 filing fee today, $3,675. Previously, I think the filing fee was somewhere in the neighborhood of $2,500 or something like that back in the day. I'm going to take a look at the archive for the 526. Yeah, it was $1,500. All right, it's $1,500, the old fee. And then in 2017. So you take 3,675, and I love doing this, okay? Get my calculator out. The calculator says 3,675 times 18,000 equals $66 million. $66 million. What did the immigration do with the $66 million it received in 2018, or the $50 million in 2019, or the $50 million in 2020? Now, in 2021, 2022, they only got $794 in 2021, $975 in 2022, fiscal year to date, $1,565. So maybe only another, $20 million altogether. So they've got about $200 million that have been given for adjudication of these cases. Where's that money? Who's adjudicating these cases? $200 million. What could you do with $200 million? Could you adjudicate 18,000 cases? Yeah, I think you'd probably do that pretty quick. Probably save some money. There is obviously a lot more. Obviously, follow the money here. But there's a lot more going on here, and that's why I think we're going to probably ask for more discovery in this case, because this gives us the need to look behind this. Why has the government received $200 million and not adjudicated cases from 5 years ago? Why have they done that? So that's the EB-5. This is about presentation of numbers. It's about letting you know what's going on. The program itself is a great program. But immigration intentionally runs it into the ground. If I want to come to America in an investment, why am I going to wait 5 years? Now, I mean, a lot of the Indians that applied over the years have been here for years. They're on EB2, EB3, and they have jillion year waiting lines, so they save up money and they do EB5. And now they're in a waiting line again. It's like going whale watching, and everybody goes to one side of the ship and the ship tails and go to the other side of the ship. It's like downgrading from EB3 to EB2, EB2, EB3, and then you upgrade to EB3, EB2. It's Who knows how many of those cases are pending? But EB-5 should be the golden star of our immigration program. I mean, what is better in, you know, for some people, bringing in people that want to invest in America? They're going to create 10 jobs. 18,000 people said they're going to create 10 jobs. That's 180,000 jobs. Cool. Why are we waiting? What are we waiting for? Well, we have nobody to fill those jobs, but at the end of the day, this program is intentionally being run into the ground by the USCIS. It's intentional. There's no other evidence available other than they intentionally not working on these cases when there has been visa availability for years. So we'll be our motion for summary judgment is due next week, next Friday. I'll be preparing that, but I'll probably be preparing a request for additional discovery in the meantime, because I think unless we can come to a settlement for our clients, I mean, if the government will agree to adjudicate our cases in the next 60 days, then of course it's their individual clients, not a class action. So they clearly are entitled to get their cases done. And if we can get that done in 60 days, great. Then we're in 30 days. We're very happy to do that. If not, we're going to have to really go for more in this lawsuit. Anyway, it's been great talking to you today. You can, obviously, it's Charles Cook again here at Cook Baxter, the Immigration Hour. We'll be back next week with more fun analysis. And maybe I'll talk about the motion for summary judgment that I'll be writing at the time. If not, I'm sure there'll be plenty of other immigration news. Until next week, have a great week. Be safe out there.